It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. At the beginning of the 20th century, flooding was not uncommon for Pittsburgh. Businesses and residents were used to dealing with spring flooding, and no official action had been taken to combat rising water levels from the city's three rivers. On St. Patrick's Day, 1936, however, unusually warm temperatures resulted in a rapid thaw of the winter ice, and the city was engulfed in 46 feet of water. In a few minutes, we'll talk about how the flood impacted the Steel City. But first, let's listen to how the newsreels of the day described the disaster, as well as a couple of accounts of how people in the Strip escaped the rising waters.
America is suffering its major flood disaster. The catastrophe that struck at Pittsburgh has caused unbelievable damage. $25 million damage here alone. $100 million in Pennsylvania. 35 are dead here, with nothing known of hundreds missing. The city is isolated. Railroads paralyzed. No food is reaching Pittsburgh. A fortunate drop in temperature checked further thaws that might have fed swollen streams. But it was 2 days before the water started to subside. Typhoid now threatens from polluted water.
My name is Jacob Hanshar. I'm the owner of Clavon's Ice Cream Parlor. So on the day of the St. Patrick's Day flood 80 years ago in 1936, the original owner, James Clavon, and his son, Raymond, were picking things up out of a basement and moving it upstairs. And this was kind of typical back those days because the flood, there would be small floods that would essentially take up some water into the basement, so you need to move the inventory so it wouldn't get ruined. Well, what happened during this day is the original owner went upstairs because he lived up there, and Raymond, his son, got trapped here because the water came up much quicker than they anticipated. So he ran on top of the telephone booths locally behind the shop and snuck out through a window, and a rowboat came by and saved his life. And then he went upstairs, and then some of the rest of the family waited to be rescued a couple days later. There were several people who had rowboats that on the dock there, and then were going around just trying to help out and save people. And it just was serendipitous that he was able to sneak out of the window, and the rowboat was just coming by, and he climbed right in. So if you take a look around the shop, you'll see some water damage, and we have a little marker that has waves on it to show how high the water got. You take a look at some of the glass, you look at some of the other woodwork, you'll see water stains, and that's original. Most of this shop is original from 1923, hasn't been touched. And then in 36, the structures here still remain.
My name is Darris Jeffcoat. I'm sacristan and historian at St. Patrick's St. Stanislaus Parish in the Strip. The great St. Patrick's Day flood had a serious impact on the church, but just went to reaffirm the life of the church in that kind of disastrous situation. Many people assisted the recovery of the church and the convent and the school well accomplished before Easter. So it was with the help of many hands that the services were fully restored. The parishioners' reaction to the flood was pretty limited. Notification came early in the morning from the maintenance man to the sisters in the convent, alerting them rising waters. The sisters discovered water in the basement up to the second step. So they quickly moved everything from the basement to the first floor, went about their business for the day. They were preparing for a school pageant and praying that the weather would turn better. As it went through the day, it continued to worsen. And there was a point at time where the water was now coming in on the first floor level. So the sisters moved everything up to the second floor and then retreated to the second floor for security purposes. They no longer could leave the building because it was surrounded by water. They said that there was a knock at the window and someone in a boat had come to take the sisters to safety. The sisters asked for about a half an hour so that they could then move everything that they had moved to the second floor to the third floor. Half hour passed, but no one returned. So it was several hours later, sisters starting to get a little more concerned, the water's continuing to rise. they saw a lantern out in the river. The boat came towards the convent. They couldn't take all the sisters at one time, so three were helped out of the window into the boat, taken to safety. Then the boatman came back, picked up the two remaining sisters, and took them to safety. So there was little time to do anything to try and save or rescue things from the church. But throughout the account, amazing how they put their faith in providence and God's trust, saying that they had been individually going to the chapel to pray the rosary. Then the Mother Superior said, there's more strength in number, so they decided to all go in and pray the rosary. And there's an account here where it says after they finished their prayers, the rain stopped.
That was St. Stanislaus Parish historian Darris Jeffcoat, preceded by Clavon's ice cream parlor owner, Jacob Hanchar. I'm joined now in studio by Heinz History Center Museum project manager Lauren Uhl to talk about how the 1936 St. Patrick's Day flood impacted Pittsburgh. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. Delighted to, always happy to talk history.
80 years since it happened. How long did it take for the floodwaters to recede?
You know, as it said on the newsreel that you just ran a few minutes ago, it only took about 2 days for the actual waters to recede, but it was a good week before things were sort of up and running again. Even though the waters had receded, you can imagine all the people downtown, their basements were flooded. So the pumps were running for days after that, and it was probably a good week before downtown businesses and businesses in the floodplain were back up and running again.
Power was out.
Power was out. Ironically, water was at a premium because the water system got overflowed and the lights went out. So even though the physical part of the flood only hit people in the floodplain, things like water and electricity affected people all over the place, all over the city, all over the region.
And I don't believe that there was an Alka-San like there is today. So what did they do to...
No, well, right. Typhoid was a real... a concern. And as soon as they could get people in again, the Red Cross came in with a lot of antidotes for typhus. So you just had to boil your water for 20 minutes.
As the water receded, there were rumors of, I guess, all kinds of things. But one in particular was that the 16th Street Bridge had collapsed. That, of course, was not true. But What fears did this cause about the safety of the bridges?
That's a good question. I'd never actually heard that before. I think probably people were more concerned about the immediate things that were affecting their family. I can't imagine what would happen if one of the bridges collapsed, because as you heard again on the news clip, because it was in the floodplain, the trains were already swamped, so it was difficult to get things in and out. So imagine if one of the bridges went down, what a catastrophe that would have been for the city.
And despite that false rumor, the Pittsburgh police were forced to close all the bridges until they were spot checked, is apparently what happened.
That makes sense to me.
Now, how did the city recover from this flood? Because there was a lot to do, clean up, sanitation, right, all that kind of thing.
Well, the good and the bad about a disaster is, of course, it brings out the worst in some people. So the National Guard was sent out to cordon off downtown to guard against looting, which apparently wasn't too big a problem. But it also brings out the best in people. And so there were National Guard poured in. Remember, it's the Depression, so the WPA is going. So something like 2,500 or 25,000 men from the WPA pour into the region to help with cleanup efforts. The Red Cross comes in, and maybe the most important in some ways is that neighbor is helping neighbor. You know, when there's a big snowstorm, everybody goes out of their house and checks on everybody else. So there was a lot of external help as well as internal help.
We're talking about the St. Patrick's Day flood of 1936 with Lauren Uhl of the Heinz History Center. It's the 80th anniversary of that famous flood. We hear about how in 1993, when there was a famous snowstorm, that on the day of the St. Patrick's Day parade, it wasn't actually St. Patrick's Day, but it was the parade day a few days before, and how, despite the snow falling at a clip of 3 inches per hour, people still got out and marched. Was there a St. Patrick's Day parade or some sort of festivity that you might be aware of on that day that somehow managed to be carried on, or did the flood pretty much just stop all activity?
As far as I'm aware, the flood pretty much stopped everything. And actually, the although it's called the St. Patrick's Day flood, it was actually the following day, the 17th, when the river reached its peak, the 46 feet. It had just continued to rise. It had already flooded by St. Patrick's Day, but it continued to rise, and then it came down. So if there was any thought of a St. Patrick's Day flood, I'm sure they already knew by that time to cancel it.
Right. And 46 feet, just, you know, we can kind of imagine that. But give us an idea. What was, we heard about St. Stanislaus, for example, where the nuns, they were going up to the highest windows and boats were passing by. So give us sort of an example of maybe how high it went on the Gulf building or something like that.
Yeah, well, staying with the Strip District, actually, if you're familiar with the Strip District, there's the river and then there's Railroad Street and then there's Smallman and Penn and Liberty. The waters reached as far as Liberty Avenue. So if you were on Smallman Street, most people would know the produce terminal. It was up to the clear story. So it was a full story plus, even that far away from the river. So there, Clavans was talking about being rescued from the second floor. There are endless stories of people all up and down the floodplain who were at their second floor and trying to get out because they were afraid it would go above the second floor.
So there are some landmarks that would give us a pretty good picture of...
Horns is probably the best one. The other famous flood was 1907, which I forget what footage it was, but it was way below the 36 flood. So Horn still has the 1907 flood mark, and then way above that is the 36 flood mark.
What remnants of the flood remain? What are some things that we might see in terms of watermarks or landmark or plaques that would mark that?
Tangibly, I think it's probably the watermarks. And surprisingly, the History Center doesn't have one, although it would have affected us too. I know our first floor was flooded. We weren't the History Center back then. But Horns and other buildings, I have seen a half a dozen buildings around town that have flood marks on them. So that's probably the most tangible remnant of the flood, other than people's memories.
What was the resulting impact on policy in terms of, you know, dealing with the future and trying to ameliorate the effects of heavy rains and the water building up the way it used to do in Pittsburgh? It doesn't work that way anymore. So what did legislators who failed to pass a bill, for example, to deal with flooding in 1934. Had it happened, we might have avoided what occurred in 1936. What has happened since?
Yeah, well, yes and no. You're right. Flooding was continual in Pittsburgh. And something like 80 years prior to that flood, there were 90-some floods. So it was just an annual expected flood. In 1907, though, they knew that this was a bigger problem than they had been taken care of. So there was actually a flood commission as early as 1907. Engineers got together, they went all up and down the waterways, and they put together proposals for a seawall around downtown and flood control up and down the rivers. But as happens with many commissions, it sort of didn't go anywhere, moldered. In 1935, there had been a pretty severe flood in 35. And this isn't just Pittsburgh, by the way. This is the entire Northeast. It's 12 states that are affected by this. So in 35, Congress started to move forward with some flood legislation, and it got through the House. But it was sort of too late in the season. So ironically, one of the first things on the agenda in the Senate in March of 36 was flood legislation. And Washington, D.C. got hit, too. So as soon as the floodwaters receded, they took up the bill, they passed it, and then the work began. But you can imagine flood control doesn't happen shortly. So there were, I think, 16 flood control projects all up and down the watershed way from way north in Pennsylvania down into West Virginia. But Kinsua Dam, I mean, it was in the 60s by the time that was completed. It's not something that happened overnight by any means.
Let's take a call from Patrick in Pittsburgh. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air with Lauren Uhl.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
There's a, over in the Cardello building on Reedsdale Street, when you go in the entrance furthest away from Heinz Field, and right after you go in there, you make a left into another stairwell, there's a high water marker on the wall in there saying 46 feet right there. You guys were struggling to look for one.
Well, now we have it. Thank you for that, Patrick.
Thank you.
Were you aware of that, Lauren?
I did not know that. I should go out and do a survey of all the flood markers there are around town.
Thank you for that call, Patrick. As we wrap this up, certainly one thing we can look to, if those of us who can remember the 1972 flood, floods since 1936 have not been nearly as bad. So clearly something was learned from that.
Right. Right. Over the years, and it probably took 30 years, flood control did happen. So it's not the concern that it was anymore. Thank you to previous generations that did that. Can I read you one little letter, though?
Sure.
We did an exhibit 10 years ago, and at the 70th, there were certainly a lot of people who remembered
right.
it, and so we had a comment book. And just to give you a clip of what people wrote, one woman, this is all she left, had my first son during the flood, March 19th, no lights, no doctor, just a lot of water.
Wow. That's a perfect note to end on, I think. The 80th anniversary of the 1936 flood today, March 17th. And again, it was 46 feet of water. And fortunately, many of the people in Pittsburgh, due to their spirit and determination, were able to survive more than many might have expected under the circumstances. We've been talking with Lauren Uhl, project manager of the Heinz History Center. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Coming up, a conversation with prominent Irish Pittsburghers. A little later, we'll hear from actor-comedian Joe Flaherty of SCTV fame. Up next, a conversation with Pittsburgh City Councilman Corey O'Connor when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.